dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. Of course, an important part in that battle space is the United States Congress. And I am very pleased to say we have a leader in the Congress in that battle space with us. He is Representative John Shimkus, a man of many parts. He represents the people of the 15th District of Illinois in the United States House of Representatives. But he also served in the United States Army on active duty and in the reserves for a total of 28 years after graduating from West Point, the U.S. Military Academy. We are very pleased to have you with us, Congressman. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio.
Frank, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You serve on committees that have jurisdiction over things that we're very interested in here at Secure Freedom Radio, and notably the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And I want to talk about a couple of things that you've been involved in and explore with you, sort of where we are and where we ought to be going as a country. Maybe we could start with your thoughts on the president's decision to relinquish control over the last vestiges, really, of what Al Gore invented, of course, the Internet, ICANN, they call it, the Domain Registration Agency. You've taken a dim view of this, and I gather have got some legislation that might prevent the relinquishing of this important control. Tell us what you're doing and how we can help.
Well, let's kind of clarify what's going on. We have IANA, who administers ICANN. ICANN is the naming of the internet space, so .com, .edu, you name it. They eventually approve that, and then that's how the world communicates with each other. Last year, there was a bill passed almost, I think, unanimously by the House, saying that there may be time to then move this into the international space, and really. The question with what the administration has done recently, and as you would know, a news dump late on a Friday afternoon.
Their favorite time of day.
The favorite time for most of their declarations is to say, we're going to move to do this now, and we're going to do this multi-stakeholder process by which we're going to relinquish, in essence, we're going to take the training wheels off the system. We're not going to have any oversight. We're going to let this multi-stakeholder, quote-unquote, organization now make these decisions. The outcry by the conservative base, as you can imagine, first of all, we really don't trust this administration very much, and to trust that they will keep their word and how they're trying to process this has a lot of my constituents shaking their head. And the other process is a lot of these words are not defined. And as you know, someone in the wordsmith business, that words have power, they mean things, and to say a multi-stakeholder without defining that. So what we simply did was put together a bill that said the Government Accounting Office, which is our, in essence, our inspector general, it's kind of the nonpartisan auditor for us to look at programs and plans and policies. We want them to take a look to see if the administration has adequately addressed our concerns as who they are now and who they might be in the future. Do we risk a totalitarian regime really taking over this process? And I would argue with a lot of people who are saying this is not needed, the world significantly changed, even in the past 5 years, where we've had state actors shut down social media,
right,
whether it's Iran or Russia and cyber
China
attacks.
You bet.
And that's a great concern.
Yeah. Congressman John Shimkus, you mentioned the conservative base is up in arms about this relinquishing of really an important part of, well, sovereignty is the way I think of it. But I think there are a lot of folks, even on the left, who aren't so comfortable with this idea, particularly because, as you say, we've seen some of these governments, the so-called shareholders or stakeholders, exercising in a way that is very detrimental to freedom of expression, very detrimental to, well, technological innovation as well. Some measures of control over the internet in their own space. This really seems ill-advised. What is your plan for bringing this legislation forward to the Congress, and what do you think its prospects are?
The legislation has been well received by the leadership in the House, so much that we had a hearing, and we had talked about it last week. We'd like to go through regular order, which means this Thursday morning, this bill is going to be heard in the and marked up in the Telecommunications Subcommittee to then move it to the full committee for consideration, which would then move it to the floor. We're in hopes that a senator will pick up similar language and start making the case. And they have done a very strong letter with a lot of senators signed it, but a letter is not legislation,
right.
and we would hope that they would get into the game here.
We need both. Congressman Shimkus, let me turn to another matter that you've been involved in over the years. The Energy and Commerce Committee, of course, is a committee of jurisdiction for matters involving things like fuel for our transportation sector, and you've made a point of trying to improve the fuel choice that we have as a result of alternatives to gasoline. And I just wondered if you've given thought to the opportunities of adapting natural gas as a source for methanol, which it turns out with very minor modifications could be used in many of the cars in America's fleet today, as it is being done in China, as a matter of fact, with some of those same cars.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. What our vision was in the last Congress was to say that the driving public should really be agnostic as they drive up to not a gasoline station, but a refueling station. And the only challenge is making sure that their choices meet the standards acceptable in vehicle warranties and the like. And you raise a credible point. Surely we can get there, whether it's through the great natural gas that we have now, through other liquid transportation fuels. But wouldn't it be nice to just drive up to a refueling station and then let these products, whether they're one or whether they're at different pumps, let them compete with each other for the consumer's choice of what they want to use to get from point A to point B?
Right. I'm convinced that it's the only way we can ultimately break the back of OPEC by changing the sort of commodity over which they have a dominant control into just another commodity that competes, as you say, at the marketplace for the demand of the American people. Let me turn to one last thing, if I may, Congressman. In the Senate counterpart to your Energy and Commerce Committee, the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee on Thursday, there's going to be a hearing on a subject that I believe your committee had a closed briefing on last week, namely threats to the electric grid from various sources, whether it's the kind of attack that took place out in California about a year ago, or others, high-altitude EMP, for example, or the sun. Where are we, in your estimation, in terms of identifying and fixing grid vulnerabilities?
Well, I think the revelations that are now public have been known in some sectors. The question is, did this help us or hurt us by the full public disclosure of this one attack? Now, if you followed the attack mentioned in the public media, those transformers were still able to operate, and even that attack did not degrade the grid where there was a loss of power. But, you know, it has raise the issue of security and how do you secure, well, what backup parts do you have? How fast can you get options there? And I think people in the transmission sector of our energy markets have always understood that there is a risk. The question is, do you overbuild so much that then you harm the ability for replacement and even observation. So great discussions are going on. We appreciate the briefings that we have, and we look forward to ensuring that we have a safe and reliable grid. Again, the market response should be what? Let's have more pathways, more lines to allow then the consumer more choices to have lower prices.
Well, we're going to look forward to a further conversation with you about this in the near future and hopefully on the air as well. Congressman John Shimkus of Illinois, thank you for your distinguished service in uniform as well as in the Congress of the United States. And thank you for taking some time to explicate some of the things you're working on at the moment that are so important to all of us. Keep up the good work, sir. We'll talk with you again very soon.
Thank you very much. Good being with you.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Sheriff Sam Page. He is currently the
Rockingham County Sheriff in Rockingham County, North Carolina. He is also the co-vice chair of Border Security and Immigration Committee of the National Sheriffs Association. He is an Air Force veteran, a military police officer, and has served his country with distinction in uniform, both of the United States and, of course, now of Rockingham County. He is here with us at the Hold Their Feet to the Fire Radio Row, and I am very pleased to welcome you, sir, and to thank you for your service to our country in assorted uniforms and in assorted capacities and all that you've done for us and are doing now, most especially to help us understand what we're up against at the moment in terms of this threat of, well, untold numbers of illegal aliens in this country and more coming by the day in light of the insecurity of our borders. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Talk a little bit about this from the perspective of somebody in North Carolina, not exactly thought of as a border state, but very much, I understand, under the same sort of assault that a lot of the states elsewhere are.
Well, it all started with some of the people in the county asking, Sheriff, what are we doing about the drug problem in our community? I said, well, you know what? We've fought this. I've been in law enforcement for 32 years, civilian law enforcement. And I said, you know, we've talked about this, and we fought this war for many years. I said, okay, so I'm going to look into it. So I started where it comes from. I financed my own trip, went to Arizona, worked with the officials down there off for some time, brought that information back and started educating my deputies and the sheriffs and the citizens I serve about how, in just no more than 2 to 3 days, what comes through the border is in our county.
And what's in your county is a function of, in part, as I understand it, people who have come here illegally and are bringing this stuff in. There's also people who have come here legally and who have overstayed their visas. How does that work out in terms of the proportion of the problem, as you see it?
Well, you know, I'm a small county, but North Carolina, and a lot of people don't know this, is number two in drug trafficking routes by the Mexican drug cartel coming from the border through next to the Atlanta region. We're now what's classified as a high-intensity drug trafficking area, a HIDA,
wow,
by the federal government, and that just declared in December, which means is we will get some more funding and support for our task force to fight and combat the problem of drugs that, again, is coming from the border areas into our county. We've arrested 15 Mexican drug cartel associates.
We're visiting with Sheriff Sam Page of Rockingham County, and you're talking about your county, your state, now being identified by the federal government as one of the worst places in the country in terms of drug trafficking, high-intensity drug trafficking. How could that be?
Well, next to Atlanta, we're a direct route. We've got some of the best highways around, and I think that is one thing is part of that artery is when drugs are trafficked, they come up through the interstate system and move through North Carolina and then route to us to the northeast and then route to the southeast to Atlanta. But we've arrested 15 drug cartel associates in the past 2.5 to 3 years. And of that, we've seized AR-15 rifles. We've seized large amount of drugs and large amounts of money.
Yeah. Drug cartels, we're told, have now really established themselves north of the border, not just south. Is this part of what you're confronting is not just the individual member, but an infrastructure that is developing in your county?
Well, not just our county, but also across America. You know, when I got involved in this project about 4 years ago, I kind of interjected myself into it to learn. And what I've been able to bring forward to the sheriffs in North Carolina, it's 100 counties and 100 sheriffs working with the North Carolina Sheriffs Association, letting these guys know that if we don't secure our borders, every sheriff in America will become a border sheriff. So we truly, it's not when they come, they're already here. And that criminal element is what we're combating.
And Sheriff, in addition to the border problem, I wonder if you might speak to the impact that amnesty has as a magnet for bringing people through that insecure border. Are you seeing that both obviously in your own immediate bailiwick, but as the co-vice chair of Border Security and Immigration Committee for the National Sheriffs Association, is this what you're getting as well?
Well, you know, we have our position on our comprehensive immigration reform position, which came out in 2011. It was adopted officially in 2013, which pretty much says we oppose amnesty as it's being talked about and read. We oppose it straight out.
Good for you. Does that seem to you to be a magnet, in fact? Is that part of the reason why you're in opposition, that it's just compounding the problems that you've already got?
Well, it's another part of it because, until we truly secure our borders, which is the first priority, and of all the discussions I'm participating in from the state, local, and federal, until we truly secure our borders, we can't have any other discussion. That's the first priority.
As you look at this from the National Sheriff's Association perspective, is it an insurmountably hard problem, as far as you're concerned, to secure the border?
Well, I think it can be done. If we can secure the borders of Pakistan and Afghanistan, if we can secure borders within Iraq, I was talking to a gentleman last night who just got back from Israel from a sheriff's. They send sheriffs and train them on border issues and border security. Look what Israel's done. It can be done.
Right. I think it's probably a better example than Iraq and Afghanistan, to be honest with you.
Yeah, actually, I think, that's the best example. Look what Israel's done.
If you bring technology to bear, if you know what you're doing, if you're serious about it, and you recognize that if you don't, people are going to die.
Well, you just said that, if you're serious. And that's my problem is I truly believe there's some congressmen up here in Washington that do not have the desire or will to secure our borders.
Well, and I would argue the president and his administration do as well. Do you hear from your counterparts elsewhere in the country a sense of outrage when the president and his senior officials say the border is more secure today than ever?
Well, let's go back in time, 2010, August 2010, when I went to the border. That was just prior to the president making the comments that I reckon if we put alligators in the moat issue, you remember that?
I do indeed.
The thing about it is I went on my own dollar to see it for myself so I could bring that information back. I don't have Air Force One. I don't have all the resources. I'm a small county, but I did it. The president could load up in the plane. He could fly down, make a day trip, and ask the questions, but he will not even address the sheriffs on the border that it affects. And you ask the sheriffs along the Arizona, New Mexico, Texas border how they're dealing with the situation, and they'll tell you the borders are not secure.
Right. Again, Sheriff Sam Page is our guest. To the extent that the administration could be learning about this from talking to the folks like those either at sort of leadership levels like yourself, Sheriff Page, or your counterparts down along the border, they certainly seem not to be doing it. Is that your experience, that you're not getting an opportunity to talk to the people who are making the policies of the day?
Exactly. They're talking to persons that have other interests. But they need to be talked to, just like when the bill, the 744, a Game of Eight bill, when it was written without inclusion of the persons that are going to be enforcing those laws and the law enforcement officials there that live there. So, again, if you're going to solve the problem, you've got to include the people. They're going to be part of the solution.
Right. But it goes back to what you just said. If you're going to solve the problem.
If.
And I guess just to wrap this up, is it your reading as a law enforcement professional, both with line responsibilities and as a senior official in your National Sheriff's Association, is it your professional judgment that what we're dealing with is an administration, some in Congress as well, who simply are not serious about securing our borders?
I'd say just shortly, yes, that's exactly correct. That I do not believe that this administration or some representatives in Congress had the will or desire to secure our national borders. Thus, Homeland Security, we'll never see a secure country until we start securing our own borders.
And that means the country will be insecure, which means it's a problem, of course, for those of you in the front lines defending the rest of us, but it is also a problem for the rest of us. Sheriff Sam Page, I want to say thank you very much for both being here at Hold Their Feet to the Fire Radio Row, and for the work that you're doing day in and day out, both in protecting the people of your county and helping protect the rest of us as well. Next up, we'll talk with Representative Lou Barletta, one of the congressmen who is trying to do something about securing our border, right after this.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's a good thing the Chinese have a reputation for inscrutability. Otherwise, they would almost certainly have laughed out loud during Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's trip to China this week. First, he urged them not to behave irresponsibly towards their neighbors. Then, he announced that China's belligerence was going to be met by a U.S. military buildup in the Western Pacific. Seems President Obama's pivot is underway at last. Indeed, we'll have precisely two more anti-ballistic missile destroyers in the region, but not until 3 years from now. Lastly, Mr. Hagel actually briefed the Chinese on one of America's few remaining secrets, U.S. cyber warfare doctrine, in the hopes that their military will be equally transparent. Fat chance. Instead, expect Beijing to remain fully secretive while derisively exploiting the vulnerabilities we've shown them. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are at Radio Row at Hold Their Feet to the Fire, a very important initiative of the Federation for American Immigration Reform that brings each year radio talk show hosts and leaders in our country together to talk about immigration issues. And I'm very pleased to have one of those leaders with us now. He's Representative Lou Barletta of the 11th Congressional District of Pennsylvania, former mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, a man who has had a long record of involvement with immigration issues. In fact, as mayor, played an instrumental role in developing some legislation to try to protect his constituents against the effects of illegal immigration. He is currently a member of the House Homeland Security Committee, serves on its Border and Maritime Security Subcommittee, among other things, and was formerly the chairman of the Congressional Immigration Reform Caucus. Congressman, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's a real pleasure to have you with
us. Thank you. Glad to be here.
I don't know where to begin. Maybe with just a little bit of ground truth. As a man with long experience in this field, the president and his senior subordinates insist the border, by which I think they mean the southern border, is more secure today than ever. What's your judgment?
Well, you know, I took a tour down to the southern border just last year, and Border Patrol took me down into a tunnel 80 feet into the ground, 2,500 feet long, and where the drug cartels were able to freely move drugs from Mexico into the United States. There's over 60 of these type tunnels here in the United States. When nearly 50% of the people who are here illegally, they don't cross the border illegally. They come on a visa. Visa expires. We can't find them. There's nothing further from the truth than our borders are secure. We're not even close to getting there right now.
The issue that keeps coming up is, if that's so, it's because there really isn't anything else we can do about it. This is just too hard. You know, the president mocks people who think we could secure the border by saying they want a moat and they want alligators in the moat and on and on. Again, you've toured the border. You've been a mayor. You've had these roles, including an oversight role in the Homeland Security Committee. What is your professional judgment as to whether the border could be made more secure than it is at the moment?
Well, you know, in the 1960s, John F. Kennedy proclaimed to the world that within a decade, America will send a man to the moon and bring him back. We didn't even have a space program at the time that Kennedy made that declaration, and we achieved that goal. We achieved Kennedy's promise to the American people. Now, here we are in 2014 saying that we do not have the capabilities of securing our own borders, but yet we're sending men and women all around the world to protect other countries.
Secure other people's borders.
It's absurd.
Needless to say, this is a less complex technical challenge than getting people to and from the moon.
Well, just ridiculous. One of the things that we need to do, and I have a bill to force the federal government to do it, is biometric entry and exit, so that when someone's visa expires, we know that they have not left the country. We have good reason to do this. There are people around the world who come here. The preferred method of entry into America by terrorists is a visa, and we're simply turning our heads and allowing it to happen.
One of the things that is, of course, compounding the insecurity of the border, Congressman Barletta, is the amnesty prospect that the president is seeking congressional authorization for, or may do by executive action, we're told. What impact is amnesty having, in your judgment, on the problem that the border's insecurity represents already? Is this exacerbating?
He's just given a green light to people all around the world who want to come to America. Why wait? Why come here through the legal process? Just like 1986, when Ronald Reagan said that, you know, we were going to give amnesty, a one-time amnesty to 1.7 million people, and that number swelled to two, three times the amount. And we told the American people that we would secure the borders. This would never happen again.
That was it.
Here we are talking about it again. Any time you talk about a pathway to citizenship or amnesty, you are encouraging millions more to come illegally. You know, you wouldn't replace your carpet at home if you still had a hole in the roof. And it's pretty simple what we need to do. Without any talk about what we're going to do with the people that are here illegally, we should be securing our borders.
As a member of Congress, you swore an oath to uphold and enforce the law. The president did a similar oath. To the extent that the president is, at best, selectively enforcing the law, and in some cases, outright rewriting the law or ignoring it altogether. Do you agree with those who describe this as a constitutional crisis?
Oh, there's no question about it. This has been a slippery slope that this administration is taking and this president is taking, walking over the Constitution. and taking us down a path that quite frankly, I don't know if we've ever been this far down a road before, on a road to where, you know, we're now electing a dictator who will pick and choose what laws and challenging Congress to try to stop me.
A nation of laws is giving way to a nation.
And there may not be anything more dangerous than what he's doing than to give amnesty to millions of people. We know for a fact that there are people who have come here illegally who want to harm America. We know Hezbollah has crossed the Mexican border into the United States. You know, to give a free pass to millions of people without knowing who it is that's here, with no regard to American jobs, to our national security, is irresponsible. And, you know, at some point, Congress needs to say enough.
Yeah. Well, to put a fine point on it, your own leadership in the House of Representatives, Republican members of the House leadership, have indicated an openness to some of the legislative steps that would translate if to, I think, an amnesty, for all intents and purposes, would leave the border insecure while offering that. Where are we now in terms of the action in the House? You mentioned your own legislation. Is it or anything else likely to come out in this this year?
I don't believe it will. I believe we've been able, those of us who obviously are taking a different position than leadership when it comes to immigration, have made it quite clear that this issue not only divides America, it divides our own conference. And at a time when, you know, we need to stand together against an administration that's taking our constitutional freedoms away, the last thing we need right now is to divide and conquer. And that's what exactly what will happen.
One of the vehicles that has been bruited about lately, as you know, for this kind of initiative on the part of the House leadership is the National Defense Authorization Act. As a guy who believes that's a very important piece of legislation, in fact, must pass legislation, in my judgment, that would be a nightmare. Do you anticipate that that will be used by the House leadership for this purpose, especially given what you've said about the security implications of it?
Again, I believe not that there wasn't an intent and not that there wasn't a willingness and hope to be able to push forth some sort of Dream Act, pathway to citizenship, amnesty for those that are here. I believe that there has been enough resistance bringing this up to the American people that they will not move forward with that. I'm hoping, you know, Chairman Buck McKeon has indicated that it will not be part of the NDAA. So, you know, we're going to make sure. And there's nothing stronger than the voice of the American people when it comes to these issues. And as long as we keep shining a light on any backdoor amnesty that may happen here in Congress, I believe we continue to be successful in stopping it.
Well, the American people are pretty clear about the inadvisability of this, and to the extent that their voices are being heard, I think you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, it sounds as though they're being drowned out in some quarters, particularly in your leadership.
Well, thanks to people like yourself.
The voices of the, you know, immigration activists and the lobbyists and the, you know, big corporate interests that would like to see cheap labor and the hell with the American people.
It's funny, when I was mayor, people would ask me, why won't members of Congress, why won't Washington do something about it? And what I used to say was, well, I think the Democrats just want the Hispanic vote and the Republicans want the cheap labor. And now I'm here and I got to see it a little closer and I realize I was wrong. They both want the votes of the Latino population, and that's a lot of what's behind the motivation.
Right. I just can't quite get my head around how Republicans think they can outpander the Democrats to get those votes. I just don't see
it's
that
like
happening.
Being a light beer, and, you know, and somebody wants a full-bodied beer.
A full-bodied beer. You're absolutely right. Congressman Lou Barletta, thank you very much for the leadership that you've been exhibiting on this issue for years, most especially now in the Homeland Security Committee and the House of Representatives. Keep it up. Come back to us again if you would.
Thank you, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Next up, we'll be talking with Chris Kobach, Secretary of State of Kansas, right after this.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At americasmightywarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At americasmightywarriors.org.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are at the Federation for American Immigration Reform Hold Their Feet to the Fire Radio Row, and I'm very pleased to say we are joined by a man who has been a hero of mine for a long time. He is Chris Kobach. He is currently the Secretary of State of the great state of Kansas. And he has been a leader on so many issues, and we're going to touch on a couple of them here today, but many of them bear on the fundamental character of our constitutional republic. We were talking in a segment previous to yours, Mr. Secretary, about the selective enforcement of the law. And
yes.
I want to specifically specifically talk a little bit about some of the efforts you've been making to
sure.
prevent that from happening. But first of all, let me say welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us and to meet you finally.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. And I've been a longtime admirer of yours, Frank. Well, so thanks for having
mutual
me.
Mutual admiration society.
There you go.
That's great. So voting rights.
Yes.
This is very much in your wheelhouse, as they say, as the Secretary of State. You've had to defend the proposition that there has to be integrity to the voting rights
Absolutely.
Process. First of all, why should that be necessary, and how important is it that you preserve that?
It shouldn't be necessary that I'd have to defend it in so many public debates, but you have increasingly people, mainly on the radical left, who are making very spurious arguments about how having to prove who you are by showing a photo ID or having to prove your citizenship is somehow a burden on them, when in fact it's not. In Kansas, we have, I would argue, probably the toughest laws against election fraud in the country. We want to make sure that it's easy to vote but hard to cheat. And so we have not only photo ID, but we also have proof of citizenship requirements when people register to vote. And I encourage your listeners to lobby their legislators and try to bring it to their state, too, because it is a very important thing you can do to ensure that aliens don't get on our voter rolls. And this is a very pervasive problem in the United States. Both legal and illegal aliens are manipulated by people who are trying to steal an election. It happens all over the country.
Now, I wanted to ask you about that, because what we're endlessly told by your opponents in this kind of debate is there's no evidence of voting fraud. What do you say to people like that?
It's amazing how they keep reciting that. There is tons of evidence of voting fraud. Let me give you just a few examples. In Kansas, when we were putting our bill through the legislature, we presented 235 cases of credible reports of voter fraud that had come to us from the county clerks. In Kansas, have multiple instances of what I just described, aliens being manipulated into voting. Let me give you a quick example. In 1997, there was a ballot issue in Seward County, Southwest Kansas, about whether a certain hog farming operation would be allowed. Kansas law required that the voters of the county have to approve it. Well, in the weeks before the election, a significant number of aliens residing in Oklahoma across the state line and non-citizens were fraudulently registered in the state of Kansas. Then they were driven up in minivans to vote in this election. Happens all the time. And you know, the aliens probably don't even know that they're breaking the law. There was a translator there telling them which way to vote. And, you know, if we don't do things like this to stop voting rights from U.S. citizens being effectively taken away, you know, every time an alien votes, that effectively overrides the vote, cancels out the vote of a U.S. citizen. So we have to take steps to protect this, and it's not rocket science.
One of the other arguments that is made, as you know, is this burden that you're imposing by requiring people to have some kind of valid photo ID is really some kind of new Jim Crow law aimed at denying legitimate voters their rights to vote. Tell me where the truth lies on that.
You know, the argument is made by people who oppose photo ID that somehow it's a burden and that the burden falls disproportionately on people of color. Nothing could be further from the truth. First of all, as your listeners know, virtually everyone in society today walks around with a photo ID in their pocket or in their purse.
Some sort of government issue.
Yeah, and of course the driver's license is the most common. And in the states that have photo ID, like Kansas, we provide for a free one if you don't have one.
How hard is it to get that if you don't have
very
one?
Very easy to get. And, on our first big election where that was in effect, the 2012 presidential election, we had only 0.07% of fewer than 1 in 1,000 voters who didn't show up with a photo ID. And in virtually every case, they had a driver's license because we checked on the driver's license database of the state. They just forgot it. And the law allows them to take up to 6 or 9 days after the election to send their photo ID in or to contact the county and make sure their vote counts.
Now, you have had a very important affirmation of your approach.
Yeah.
By the Supreme Court. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, actually, by the U.S. District Court for the District of Kansas, but a case that could potentially go to the Supreme Court. This federal agency, the Election Assistance Commission, had been trying to basically blow a hole in our proof of citizenship provision, saying that people who use the federal form, there's a state form and a federal form, that anyone who uses the federal registration form, they don't have to prove citizenship. And Kansas and Arizona jointly sued this federal agency, and a few weeks ago we won in federal court. Big victory for the states, paves the way for other states now to require proof of citizenship. And I would encourage people, contact your legislator. If they want a copy of the bill, go to my website, chriskobach.com, K-R-I-S-K-O-B-A-C-H.com. We have a copy of the SAFE Act right on the front page. Download it, give it to your legislator, say, hey, we need this in our state because we've got to protect against this.
Let me ask you a related question. What you're up against here, it seems, in terms of the Holder Obama Justice Department, is a practice that is unfortunately now pretty much endemic, as we've been talking mm-hmm. about with several mm-hmm. of our other guests. Well, that is the selective enforcement
yes.
of the law. How is that a factor in all this, and specifically, what are the constitutional implications for the country of allowing this practice to continue?
Well, let me tell you also, Frank, I represent 10 ICE agents who are suing the Department of Homeland Security in court. And we brought this case shortly after the June 2012 announcement by the president's administration that they would not be enforcing our laws against certain so-called dreamers, people who claim they entered the country under the age of 16. I say claim because the ICE officers are forbidden from making them prove it. Anyway, these 10 ICE agents, their argument is they are being ordered to break the law. There is actually a statute that Congress passed in 1996 that specifically says that certain illegal aliens must, not may, but must be placed, shall be placed in removal proceedings. The order from the Department of Homeland Security is ordering these agents to break that law, and they're being placed in a horrible position. Either they follow the orders of their supervisors and they're breaking federal law, or they disobey the orders of their supervisors and they're in job trouble. So this administration is it's putting law enforcement officers in a horrible place. It's also failing its Article 2, Section 3 obligation under the Constitution to faithfully execute the law. And I think our founding fathers
is putting the rest of us in a horrible place as well, which is really the trouble here, is that it's not just the law as you've described it in this particular instance or even the broader practice, but the security implications of this are very real.
Absolutely.
And very worrying. We are almost out of time, Chris Kobach. It's flown by, and I hope that you'll become a regular guest of ours because I'd
be
love
my
to
pleasure.
Talk with you more. But one other issue that I just wanted to both commend you for your leadership on it and to also give you a chance to just say a word about is American laws for American courts. Radical concept, I know, but it was actually adopted in your state.
Yes.
And you brought it to the attention of the Republican National Convention in the last election cycle. Talk about what that's about, why it's important, and why you've engaged in it.
Well, as many of your listeners may know, there is an effort going on below the radar, for the most part, to insert Sharia law-based defenses into court cases. People will a defendant in a spousal abuse case will say that, my tradition, my custom of Sharia law justifies the beating, or et cetera. And sometimes in some states, county judges, district judges are accepting those defenses. And in Kansas, we passed a law that says only American law can be applied in American courts. It doesn't single out Sharia law, but it simply says any foreign law, any foreign legal tradition, that doesn't work in the United States. You look at U.S. law, you look at specifically Kansas law, and we have that on our books in Kansas, and we hope other states will adopt that too. We've got, one of the genius of our founding fathers system is that it's a laboratory of democracy. When one state tries something, other states can adopt it. If it works, I encourage them to do that too.
I do too. Your leadership on so many of these issues is tremendously important and appreciated. Chris Kobach, the Kansas Secretary of State. As I say, I hope you will come back to us again very soon.
Anytime.
I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same
All right.
time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.